April Power.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning and happy Friday. I'm Steve Chiotakis. It's the morning open. We're less than a half an hour into trading today and some nice stock market gains last month. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Where's Wall Street? Dow is down at this hour, about 0.5%. So's the NASDAQ and S&P 500. S&P down about 4 points this hour. NASDAQ down about 10. Most European markets closed for today for May Day. The FTSE's basically flat at this hour. Most Asian markets were closed as well, but the Nikkei gained about 1.5%. So let's bring in Sam Stovall, Chief Investment Strategist at S&P Equity Research in New York. Morning, Sam.
Good morning, Steve.
Thanks for being with us. So what a month, you know? I mean, stocks are down, though. April had this big, more than 400-point gain, and stocks are down going into May. What's up with that?
Well, first off, it's less than 20 minutes into the trading day, but certainly April was a very good month, despite T.S. Eliot calling it the cruelest of months. We saw the S&P 500 gain more than 9%. We saw 9 of the 10 sectors within the S&P post advances, and only 14 of the 134 industries decline on the month. So the rally seems to have continued from the bottom that was put in place on March 9th.
So let's then use those binoculars, Sam, and look ahead with this old adage, sell in May and walk away. Is that the case this year?
Well, I don't think so. The old saying does show, whether you look back to 1970, 45, or 1929, that the market does much better from November through April than it does from May through October. I guess investors focus more on their TANs and their portfolios. But following what is likely a bear market bottom in March of this year, following bear market bottoms since 1932, you've been better off sticking with stocks during this traditionally weak period. The market has gained an average of 12% and has risen 12 of 14 times. Of course, past performance is no guarantee of future results.
So we're going to get some manufacturing news today. We got jobless claims out yesterday, better than expected. What can we expect today?
Well, I think we're probably going to see the Michigan sentiment report come out showing a slight improvement. We're also going to look at something called the ISM, Institute for Supply Management Manufacturing Report, which is also likely to show an increase. Factory orders, however, we think are going to show a decrease. But in general, this is still relatively positive because you have a sprinkling of good news among less dismal news in the other areas.
All right. Sam Stovall, thanks for being with us.
Happy to be here, Steve.
All right. Chrysler is in bankruptcy court this morning. The plan, of course, part of what President Obama touted yesterday as the saving of the automaker. We're going to get the latest car sales report in a little while. April's number is not likely to shine like a fresh wax job. And in these days of anemic car sales, larger dealers are selling more used cars. That's making things tough for the smaller lots. Here's Marketplace's Amy Scott.
Mort MacArthur owns Mort's Imports in Cincinnati. I first talked to him about 6 months ago. For a sign of how the business has changed since then, he shows me an 8-year-old Honda Accord he's selling for $4,500.
But look at this. It has 215,000 miles on it already. Previously, I wouldn't have been able to think that you could sell them that high.
But MacArthur doesn't have much choice. When people buy new cars, they often trade in their old ones. Traditionally, anything with more than 100,000 miles on it, the dealer would unload to used car dealers like MacArthur.
But now, new car dealers, since they're not selling new cars, are keeping those models, and they consider high miles 140,000, 150,000 miles. And that's what's showing up more at the places where the wholesalers have them or at the small auctions that I go to find cars.
Selling higher mile cars is just one way MacArthur has adapted to the recession. In better times, he sold 15 to 20 cars a month. But with credit tight and people out of work, he's now lucky to sell 10. So he's keeping fewer cars on the lot.
The bane of the used car lot is dead batteries and flat tires. The gremlins get them in the middle of the night from somewhere. So I don't want a bunch of inventory sitting here and getting old.
In order to sell well-worn cars, MacArthur spends a lot of time spiffing them up.
Hey, what's up?
He takes me to a nearby paint shop to see about sprucing up a 98 Mustang. He's told it'll cost him about $1,500.
What if we did a Mako-type job, just shot it?
That's what I'm going to call, see if I could just seal it.
Yeah.
A lot of MacArthur's competition has closed in the last year. He's cut back on his advertising. He hasn't paid himself in months.
I just need to be able to survive the downturn. And to do that, what I have to do is just get smaller, sort of duck.
At this rate, he figures he can duck for maybe another year. In Cincinnati, Ohio, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Listening to The Morning Report on Friday, May 1st, 2009 at marketplace.org. Starting today, the Social Security Administration will be adding a little something extra to the checks it sends out. It's all part of the government stimulus plan passed last winter. Here's Marketplace's Steve Henn.
This month, 50 million retirees will get a one-time $250 bonus in their government checks. If you're married, you can expect $500, and it doesn't matter how much you make. Even Warren Buffett will get this tax-free perk, too. Retired government workers who don't receive Social Security will get a one-time $250 tax credit instead. It's all part of the stimulus plan that passed last February. The Social Security Administration says these checks will inject $13 billion into the economy quickly. Economists say retirees living on fixed incomes are likely to spend the extra money quickly and provide a shot in the arm for the economy. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
It's day two of Chrysler's new lease on life, to use President Obama's phrase. The struggling automaker filed for bankruptcy protection yesterday, and with the hopes of emerging in 2 months in a partnership with the Italian carmaker Fiat. That leaves all the uncertainty in Detroit to Chrysler's big brother, General Motors. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports.
GM is dealing with the same kinds of problems Chrysler was, though on a much larger scale, getting bondholders to forgive debt in exchange for stock. Larry Klebina, the manager of a fund that owns GM bonds, says the message of Chrysler's move is this: the specter of bankruptcy isn't just a bargaining ploy.
There's no doubt the threat is real. The outcome could be the same. And that if you don't want that outcome, you better negotiate and come to a deal.
Joseph Philippi of Auto Trends Consulting says Chrysler's bankruptcy is also a trial run to see how its nationwide network of dealers and suppliers holds up.
And that could very well result in an appreciable number of suppliers and or ancillary businesses in these factory towns going out of business.
And remember, many of those same suppliers provide parts for GM cars, so the effects could be felt even if there is no GM bankruptcy filing. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
MasterCard reported better than expected first quarter earnings today. Visa's report came out earlier this week. These companies are holding up surprisingly well despite a drop in consumer spending. Tamara Keith explains why.
Paul Caldwell swears by his debit card.
Oh, yeah, every time I get gas, every time, you know, I go to the bookstore, everything.
These days, more money is spent using Visa debit cards than credit cards because people like Caldwell spend only what they've got. That's fine with Visa and MasterCard. Both debit and credit purchases earn the payment processors the same fees. Here's Bill Sheedy, president of Visa North America.
Our debit volume is held up nicely, where credit volumes have been more impacted with the general economic and consumer concerns.
Now that banks are tightening credit, debit cards are more attractive to everyone, says John Williams with Macquarie Capital.
So I think most of the banks recognize that debit is where in the future they're going to be able to make a pretty nice amount of money.
It's all about moving people away from cash and over to plastic, where there's money to be made. In Washington, I'm Tamara Keith for Marketplace.
Today marks the five-year anniversary of the single largest expansion of the European Union. 8 countries in Central and Eastern Europe and 2 in the Mediterranean joined the EU in 2004. But as Christopher Worth reports, the global economic crisis has killed the mood to celebrate.
EU officials are trying to put a bright face on the five-year mark. They just released a report that says the mass exodus of workers from east to west boosted EU GDP by $65 billion and projects that could double by 2020. But since last fall, the flow of migrants has slowed to a standstill. Eastern Europe has been among the hardest hit in the global downturn. Katinka Barish at the Center for European Reform says the crisis hasn't provided the type of stability many countries had hoped for.
The reason why these countries are now so vulnerable is because they've integrated so fast into the EU. Now they feel kind of helpless because they have no control over their own economies.
The IMF has deployed billions in emergency loans to countries like Hungary and Poland. Nonetheless, many more countries wait at Europe's door, including the Western Balkans and Turkey. Albania filed its paperwork on Tuesday, and Iceland could start the process as early as this summer. In London, this is Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
If you're a tween or you've got one, you might want to stick around for our next report. See, tomorrow, the Jonas Brothers, the band of singing siblings, have a date. Their sitcom premieres on the Disney Channel, but it's not just a show. It's Disney's latest attempt to create another teen empire. Here's Marketplace's Jennifer Collins.
In the Jonas Brothers' new show, Nick, Kevin, and Joe are just regular guys with regular problems that they sing about. Disney's banking on TV romances like that to drive real girls crazy, which in turn will drive them to Jonas Brothers movies, concerts, and merchandise, and give Disney another teen money-making machine. Miley Cyrus, a.k.a. Hannah Montana, is still in the fold. But with High School Musical heartthrob Zac Efron growing up, Disney needs to fill the pipeline. Jason Squire is a film professor at the University of Southern California. He says Disney's got the formula down.
The smart people at Disney position the Jonas Brothers in a series of exposures on different platforms. Each platform represents a new layer of potential customers and revenue.
Customers like 11-year-old Kyla Giron. She's got a Joe Bros poster.
So, like, they signed it.
And one of her friends.
Like, she has, like, a whole outfit. Like, everything of them. Like, a headband with their, like, faces on it.
But so far, the Jonas Brothers are no Hannah Montana. Their movie, a 3D concert, brought in $12 million in the opening weekend. That's only a third of what the company was expecting, and way out of Hannah's range.
Nobody really knows that there is going to be a devoted following of viewers on the Disney Channel who watch the Jonas Brothers.
Kyla Giron says she's waiting to see if the Jonas Brothers can act. Then she'll commit. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Rio de Janeiro is bidding for the 2016 Olympic Games, and the Olympic Committee traveled there this week to take a look at that country's assets. Besides the sun and samba, Brazilian officials tout the economy, which has fared relatively well in this global economic fallout. So what makes Brazil so special? From the Americas desk at WLRN, here's Marketplace's Dan Gretsch.
Brazil once was one of the world's most indebted countries, but last year, fat with profits from biofuels, iron ore, and oranges, Brazil paid off that debt. Brazil once had one of the world's biggest gaps between rich and poor, but it plowed money into poor areas, raising 30 million people out of poverty since 1995. Paulo Sotero directs the Brazil Institute at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars.
There is an important phenomenon of an explosion of consumption in poor areas of Brazil.
That new consumer class has kept the economy afloat, even as exports take a nosedive.
The country seems to have recovered a sense of optimism, a sense of hope that was not present a few years back.
Sotero says this confidence, while intangible, is one of Brazil's greatest assets. It has helped sustain Brazil through these tough times. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Checking Wall Street again, the Dow is down about 0.15%. Just slightly down at this hour. Check it out at marketplace.org in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great weekend.
American Public Media.